Yeah, that's good. That's good. Well, welcome, welcome. Thanks. Does everybody have a pattern on the trestle board? Anybody? That's good. That's good. Well, if everybody has a pattern on the trestle board, let's recite it. All the power that ever was or will be is here now. I am a center of expression for the primal will to good, which eternally creates and sustains the universe. Through me, its unfailing wisdom takes form in thought and word. Filled with understanding of its perfect law, I am guided moment by moment along the path of liberation. From the exhaustless riches of its limitless substance, I draw all things needful, both spiritual and material. I recognize the manifestation of the undeviating justice in all the circumstances of my life. In all things great and small, I see the beauty of the divine expression. Living from that will, supported by its unfailing wisdom and understanding, mine is a victorious life. I look forward with confidence to the perfect realization of the eternal splendor of the limitless light. In thought and word and deed, I rest my life from day to day upon the sure foundation of eternal being. The kingdom of spirit is embodied in my flesh. The main message that we're told about this key is that in the relationship between our self-conscious aspect and our subconscious aspect, which are all pretty familiar because we've been talking about it a long time. The channel through which any superconscious guidance comes to us is through our subconscious. I know it's a little confusing that that we have to use a term like subconscious, but in general, subconsciousness is that part of ourselves of which we are totally unconscious. And that is the major part of ourselves. That's much the more, we'll say, it has more dimension than the self-conscious. The self-conscious is a powerful integrating force in its own area, and the subconscious in the whole scope of the subconscious is the universe itself. So that's why I made the statement that the totality of the subconscious is something that we certainly would be making a terrible mistake if we put it down, so to speak. So the self-conscious intellectual aspect in this particular presentation is willing to listen to what's coming through subconsciousness. In this image, you see that she is connected with the superconscious self by the fact that she is looking at it, and she's also in a receptive attitude. And so this is a kind of a circuit that we have here, which we're told, don't forget it. That's the message, don't forget it.
Now, having gotten past this main message of the key, which has to do with our guidance, which comes from the area of superconsciousness through subconsciousness, now I'm going to lean on you to come up with some of the symbolism in the key, aside from that message I just repeated, which I read in a book some time ago. Hi. So I'm ready for volunteers on the symbolism in the key. Yes?
Well, the angel is said to be the Archangel Raphael, who is a healer. It's the angel of healing.
Do you know Raphael by any chance?
Just through the key, that's all.
I just wondered whether you had any personal experience.
I live pretty near San Rafael.
Well, we have an ex-member of our group, Raphael Ornstein, who adopted the name Raphael after he'd spent some time here. His name used to be Dolph, and he was smitten by the tarot, and so he changed his name to Raphael Ornstein. And he is he's an M.D., and as they say, a man of parts. He's quite active in Marin County, in the area. He has great, great projects. You never know. You shoot a gun in the air and you might hit a duck. On the other hand, you might not. But he has an interesting vision of doing over, for instance, Alcatraz. What? Yes, Alcatraz. In a big way, and making it a world center of peace and progress and everything else.
Oh, I saw that picture on the back of the Common Cause. The last
yeah,
book.
That's his picture.
Oh, that's it.
Yeah. So as I say, he's a man of parts, and he liked Raphael very much. And I think he's probably a lot more familiar with Raphael than I am. I have nothing against Raphael, but I just want to make it clear that I don't contact him very often.
He's associated with air, isn't he? In the
yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, well, I guess his robe must represent the mechanical universe because it's colored violet, which is that stands for that. And then the clouds are kind of a further obscuration of things beyond the mechanical appearances, which represent a sort of boundary between earthly life and spiritual life, and yet this woman is able to see the angel and respond to his suggestion, which is symbolized by making the sign of the Trinity on both hands, and in contradistinction to the devil down there who makes the fool sign. And so she's passing the suggestion on to him. Behind her is a tree, a natural tree with five fruits, and those represent the five senses. And around it is a serpent, which represents the serpent power.
Do you think that's the tree of life by any chance?
Well, I suppose in the Bible it would be called the tree of knowledge. I think that would be the one.
But do you? I asked you a question. Do you think it's the tree of life?
Is it a tree of life? It's a tree of life.
Well, okay. He's a big good lawyer. Not the Adrian.
It looks a lot.
I put that suggestion out to you because, as I just pointed out, the tree is very much alive and bearing fruit.
Yeah.
And if there's no sensation, there's no life anyway.
Yeah.
So you might
certainly learn a lot of knowledge.
Well, that's all. That's the only way you learn anything. You have inner and outer senses, but you don't learn much without having a connection with the outer senses, do you?
Yeah. Actually, the tree is a little like the caduceus, if that's the right pronunciation, symbol of the medical profession, which is carried by Hermes, or Mercury, which rules Gemini, which this key is associated with.
Yes. Yeah. Well, tell us more about the snake. It's very interesting. If you if you, for instance, if you consider it the tree of life, well, then the snake, of course, going up the tree could be, if you had considered this the tree, the snake going up the tree could be the kundalini, couldn't it?
Yeah, it would be like the lightning symbol. Well, the lightning comes down the tree, and I guess the snake goes up.
Yeah, and then, you remember in Key 10, the snake descends into manifestation,
yeah.
Goes down this way, and in this key, it's going up. It's not going down, it's going up.
Yeah, that's a yellow snake on that key, that's the color of the spirit. And this is kind of the natural color, which is green, yellow mixed with blue, which kind of brings it down into a...
Oh, that's the Scorpio color, yeah. And that's sort of like the magician's belt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really important color there. And behind the man,
maybe you communicate with a serpent.
Sure. Well, Jesus said to be wise as a serpent, didn't he?
Yeah. Harmless as doves, I guess.
Harmless as doves. Well, I guess I don't have any more on him.
Yeah,
how
do you know it's a him?
Point is well taken. behind the man is a tree which is kind of more abstract. It doesn't look so natural. It doesn't have any green on it, but it has 12 flames. So these flames are said to stand for the 12 zodiacal signs. And each flame is triple, which is said to stand for the 3 decanates of each sign. I guess it corresponds with the more abstract kind of thinking that's associated with masculine. Part of the psyche, and green through feminine.
Well, it's kind of interesting when you take the astrological aspect that it's sort of, from a a seed point of view, the male carrying the seed of all these different aspects is that the male is the carrier of all these seeds, in a sense. And so this is what's involved on his side of the tree. He is a carrier of all these seeds. And in this case, they're represented by the flame. But these are all the characteristics of life, which is what the zodiac is all about. I mean, you're talking about all the distinct differences between, people and so on and so forth, everything else, which is... sort of like DNA and the whole thing. Yeah.
I've never really thought very much about this before, but this is definitely kind of a tableau of Adam and Eve also.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
So, there's two angels in this card there. There's Raphael and there's Lucifer. Also, it is Adam and Eve, but it isn't. Is it the Garden of Eden?
Yeah.
It is. And
this is before there were any problems.
And I'm not a rabbi, and I certainly wouldn't know how to talk about the relationship between the story of the temptation in the Bible and the scene that's going on here, but I would be interested in hearing people compare those,
Well, you know what the doctrine is. It's the so-called occult doctrine. You know what that is. It differs from the Bible very much in that it states quite clearly that the so-called fall was not a fall at all, but represented the improved sensitivity of the male. In other words, the male was sort of like Flintstone, if you know what I mean. And you know, it's a... As a matter of fact, males are inclined to fight and kill each other and all that sort of thing. And which is, I would say, perhaps noble of them to do that, to fight and kill each other. You know, the noble knights in King Arthur's court were always going around killing themselves and everybody else. And they were considered a very noble bunch of knights. But on the other hand, they weren't very bright, were they? And the idea of this fall was that what Eve did to the male was to teach him that there was another side to life that he hadn't thought much about and pointed out to him. And of course, this, in lots of places, this could be applied even in our times, you know, because there are a lot of places where women don't have a very good position in the scheme of things. So far from dragging down Adam into sin, the occult teaching is just the opposite. She actually was lifting him up into a better recognition of what life was all about. That's the kind of teaching.
Well, why is it so different from what it says in the Bible? That after this,
well, I'll tell you something, honey, which you've heard before. There are two Bibles. There's the King James version of the Bible, which is one that we're all very familiar with. We've had our heads rubbed in that enough, God knows. And then there is the Hebrew Bible. And the Hebrew Bible starts off totally different from the King James Bible. Another does, it doesn't say in the Hebrew Bible, and God created the heaven and the earth. It says the Elohim created the heaven and the earth. And the Elohim are the seven spirits before God. In other words, these are the powers of, that are the powers of Bina. So that, I mean, this is the way it is all along. And the Kabbalah states categorically that the Bible can be taken four ways, just right off the top. One, you can read the words and speak the words and say, you know, dog, cat, mouse, blah, 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 whatever's in the Bible, you know. Say this like this. Okay, that's one. Two, it's an allegory. In other words, it doesn't say, it says one thing and means another. And you're supposed to be able to penetrate the allegory. Three, it's the law. In other words, it's the law of God, the law of life, and so on and so forth. And finally, it's inspirational. But you can't reach the inspirational level in the Bible unless you progress through the other levels.
I'm just curious. I'm not working toward any point or anything, but I'm just curious. In the Hebrew Bible, then, does... Right after this event, does God get all ticked off and tell Lucifer he's going to crawl on his belly like a reptile for then on out? And
oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, sure. Sure, but that, it doesn't, it's not to be taken literally. That's the point, yes?
Well, there's a book that I heard about on the radio that I might have mentioned in class before, and a story, I can't remember the author, but it's a new book, so you could probably find out what it was. And in this book, it says that St. Augustine, who's responsible for a lot of Christian interpretations of the Bible, was himself influenced by a distorted version of Zoroastrianism. And, and Zoroastrianism is real good and, you know, there's like a good and an evil both. They're like separate things. And that Augustine was really influenced by that, and that was the root. The thesis of this book is that that's the root of all this good and evil stuff.
And Satan.
And Satan, that's perverted Christianity. So if you wanted to find out more about that book, maybe someone else has heard of it enough to be author of it.
So are Zoroastrianism similar to Judaism?
No. No, the book wrote the author. No, I have to interview the author.
Is Zoroastrianism similar to Judaism?
No, it's not. I don't think so.
I've read it in college, but I was in my 20s and they're in
much about Zoroastrianism, but from what I know of it, it's real different from Judaism.
Yes.
Well, Satan in the Old Testament had an article in front of it. It was called The Satan. It was sort of like a prosecuting attorney, really. It wasn't so much a quickly evil figure as something that was a necessary part of the whole legal process.
Well, on top of that, Satan is, he never was kicked out of the universe or anything like that.
He walked right. It says in Job, the sons of God came before God, and Satan was among them.
That's right.
Right there.
Of course, our interpretation of it is, if you can hold your breath like that long, is coming out from the devil cave, where he's our scapegoat. In other words, it's very simple for us to blame all our problems on the devil, when actually we administer these crimes to ourselves all the time. And then blame it on the devil. You know, we get into all kinds of trouble. Everybody gets into trouble and says, well, I don't know, I just felt that way, or, you know, something made me do that. I wasn't really myself, and so blah, 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 blah. Or Satan took a shot at me and, you know, hit me. Okay, now the mountain, of course, as Paul Case tells us, represents the sacred mountains that there are. He says it's similar to, Fujiyama and Ararat and all these other sacred mountains. The abode of the gods. And it also, he says, it also represents pregnancy, which is certainly bound to happen if this key goes to a logical conclusion, which I'm sure it will. Nobody mentioned the sun, but it's in there. Yes?
Well, I wasn't going to mention the sun, because it is as if the angel Raphael is fronting for the sun. I mean, I take it to mean that the sun is God.
Yeah.
And that Raphael is the agent of the Most High in this.
Yeah. Yeah, well, having graduated from the Catholic hierarchy at the age of 12, I didn't get too close to all the angels and archangels, and you know, my association with the church was on a very low level. Like if you lost a $20 bill, you appealed to Saint Anthony to help you try and find it, and you appeal to all the local saints, and then of course the ladies appeal most of the time to the Blessed Virgin, which is a very, very good idea, because unknowingly they were approaching the Divine Mother herself, which is a pretty good thing to pray to any time. But I'm not up on Catholic theology and the angels and so on and so forth. And in general, I'm not up so much on the Hindu pantheon either. I know they have angels and archangels and everything else in the Hindu pantheon, and heaven knows they have it in the Buddhist pantheon. So there are all these angels floating around and archangels and all that. So just let me remind you of why I started this group in the first place. And the only reason why I continue to do it. The first place I started because I think that any effort that you put into trying to understand yourself is of prime importance to everybody. That sounds easy, but historically, it is one of the most difficult, tasks to master. And secondly, I felt that even though we don't succeed in knowing ourselves in a final way, whatever we can find out about ourselves is of prime importance also. And the reason for that is that if you can get control of the various aspects in yourself through understanding, and that's the only way you can get it, well, you're not going to put your hand in the fire. That's about the size of it. And so this, as a preventive measure, is extremely valuable to you. And that was the second thing that sort of follows after the first. And that was all there was to it. And I've never changed my goal, and I still feel exactly the same way about it. Now, you understand that there is no way, you know, like Buddhism, Catholicism, right? They're all tracks and paths that go up the mountain and so on and so on. But there's no such animal as the way for any one person. It just doesn't work that way. The way is your way. That's the way. And your way is extremely difficult to discover when you're young. I can remember that far back, you know, when I was young. And I was going in all directions at once, you know, like the White Knight, we used to ride off in all directions with Alice in Wonderland. That's what I was doing. You know, I'd try a little of this, and I'd gallop off in this direction, and gallop off in that direction, and so on and so forth. And I did it because I couldn't help it. I was trying to get somewhere, and I didn't know where I wanted to get or what I wanted to do, and so on and so forth. So I kept galloping, you know, like that. And there was a funny line about this in Arsenic and Old Lace. Did any of you ever see that play? Well, do you remember this guy who loves Teddy Roosevelt? And he was also a screw pot. And he used to suddenly be overcome by a fit of Teddy Rooseveltism. And he'd come into a room and he'd say, "Charge!" Like that, you know. And of course, it was terribly funny because this was his whole life, you know. He was so mixed up with Teddy Roosevelt. Like the White Knight, he wasn't going anywhere, you know. The war was over, and he was just, his emotions were involved, and so on and so forth. So, your own way, which is the way, as far as I'm concerned, and I didn't, you know, I thought about it quite a bit before I made such a brash statement. In the economy of life, I feel that the way life is organized, each one of us has everything that is typical of life is in ourselves. We represent life. And, you know, for instance, the deer around us over in Marin County, they don't have to be told where the roses are in my wife's garden or anything like that. And they don't go down and get a license to go in and eat her roses or anything like that. They just jump over the fence, believe it or not, and come and eat the roses and then jump back and go away and come back next year and eat the roses next year. And inside of them is the whole bit. They don't have to study a book or anything like that. And they depend immediately on nature, the great Mother Nature, and also on the friendliness of the people in the neighborhood, that they don't shoot them, you know. But they don't know anything about that either. So there's this innate dependency in the animal kingdom. Well, we can use some of that. And if we define ourselves in a, well, we'll say, in an intelligent way, which means that we don't put ourselves down, and we remember that we do have all these remarkable qualities inside of ourselves, every one of us, not just individuals. Of course, some have more sense than others, but everybody has a certain basic endowment. And this is your own endowment. That's it. Now, if you follow that path, you might say, well, oh, I'm sure God has something different for me, you know. Well, I got news for you. God is not going to come down and give you a diploma or anything like that. No way. And neither is anybody else to give you a diploma that's really worth anything, because when you get your diploma, you haven't even started, have you? What?
You made a drink, but when you say innate dependency, I think of a person. There's another type of, kind of a worried type of innate dependency, where people can be afraid of their own doorway. You know, they're so frightened of it. So when another person comes along and meeting that doorway, they're going to depend on you to get yourself through the doorway. And he's fearful of himself. That he's afraid of himself. So it's, I mean, the real door.
Yeah. The self-understanding is no picnic. As far as this teaching is concerned, the two peaks in the keys that represent the goal, like in key 14, there are two peaks, and one is understanding, and the other is wisdom, and they are the highest, as high as you can get. And in order to get up to whatever 14 or 15,000 feet, you've got to, you know, if it's Everest, it's quite a climb. So it indicates that, you know, this is not child's play at all. And so it's not supposed to be. But I was just saying, you know, about how does God feel about us and our fulfilling our own destiny. Now, believe it or not, the universe works on a very economical basis, and that's the reason that we're finding out with chips and one thing or another that there can be an enormous amount of information packed inside of a very small space, and there's an enormous amount of pizzazz inside of us with all these endowments that we have. Our game, the game that we have to play, is to pick the one that we go down to Stanford and take a test or something, and they tell us what we are after we get through. No way. The way we do it is trial and error. But if we do it right, then we have the blessing of the Most High for the simple reason that this is what we were supposed to be, and this is what we're supposed to do in the whole scheme. And to make it all work, everybody has to be what he or she is supposed to be, and then it all works. You know, all the parts are working, and there's no argument, there's no anything. You might say, oh, well, this is, he's now talking about a mechanical universe, and it's fatalism, this, that, and the other. Baloney, I'm not talking about that at all. Because what I'm telling you is, the only way that you can express yourself is in expressing your deepest desire about yourself. That's the only way you can do it. If you try to do it any other way and follow somebody else's rules, you'll never make it. In fact, you'll make yourself miserable following anybody else's rules. But for your own, this deep desire that you have inside of yourself, that's just part of the universal endowment that everything has, you know. And when you have that straight, you've got everything straight. You have no arguments. You don't have to sell the idea of yourself to anybody else. I mean, you don't have to say, well, take it or leave it. No, you don't have to do anything. You just plain is, that's all. You know, like they say, I is. And that does it.
ID.
What?
ID.
Yeah.
You mentioned trial and error as a the way, right?
Yeah, for yourself.
Yeah.
You go in all directions, up, down, sideways, and everything else. And it's like archery or anything else, as speaking as a figure of speech. But actually, what you're doing is you are learning all the time what you are. You're learning what your true identity is.
You know, in the Gurdjieff system, they talk about four ways.
Mm-hmm.
They have the way of the yoga, which is the intellect, and the way of the monk, which is the emotion, or the way of the priest, and then they have the way of the fakir, which is like an Indian or a standing position for 25 years and they can't move. That's physical. And then they have a fourth way, and that's called the way of the sly man. And that's what Spencer wrote a book about that, called the fourth way. And they term it, fourth way is through self-observation.
Yeah.
Self-remembrance.
That's right.
And that's what you mean by trial and error, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah. In other words, because of, for religious reasons, and because of the, well, we can't, at the present stage in our existence, we can't get along without organized religion. We're not ready for it. But you and I can get along without it. And that's why we talk about it. It doesn't, we have nothing against religion. I mean, it's a necessity. It's not a, an option. It's a necessity for most people. That's the way it is. It's some place to go when there is no place to go. So organized religion is of the greatest importance anywhere, any place. You know, it's a stabilizing influence. But we don't need that. What we're talking about is the cultivation of being ourselves, knowing that this is the best contribution that we can make to life. Is to be ourselves. I mean, in the deepest sense, in the sense that we know today that we have achieved this goal for ourselves, and when we wake up 3 months from now, we will know that we have achieved this same goal for ourselves, that we're not a horse one day, an elephant the next day, a giraffe the next day, a grasshopper the next day, and so on and so forth. We are stabilized in ourselves, and we feel that This is, as far as God is concerned, that this is the economy of life.
It's very difficult to get to that.
It's the mountains in the tower.
That's what you call being crystallized, so to speak. They say that. You know, to really stay the same is very difficult.
Yeah.
So one minute you've got this understanding, the next minute that, depressed 1 minute, elated the next, despondent the third.
Let me just finish off the equation, or that's just a joke. But I mean, let me finish off the practical aspect of the idea. You have to act in this life if you're going to be part of life. You must act. That's why in the tarot, the middle key in this tableau is the Empress, and this is the key of action. It means that action is the key word for the central key in the tarot. And that means exactly what it says. And that means that we have to act. If we're going to live on this level, we have to act. And we have to act. And so that means doing something with our faculties and so on and so forth. What we do is tied up with this business of what we are. And in other words, we can act, we have different levels in ourselves that we can act on. We can act on these different levels. You know, an intellectual level, an emotional level. If you want to be a poet, that means you have to cultivate your emotions and learn how to write about them and so on and so forth. A musician or whatever. That's part of the acting. That's part of the acting. And to accomplish this, if you were going to borrow a theological term, you'd say that if you are truly yourself, you're in a state of grace. In other words, if you represent what life would have you be, you are it already when you get to this level. And you rest on this, this is where you rest. Yes?
Well,
I think so.
The shares what you know, the knowledge of the male figure, yet at the same time there's a harmony with the female figure being receptive and available to you.
Yeah, and you remember now, what you, as long as you brought up the subject, you remember that this shows, symbolically, it shows yourself divided. And in the end of the tarot, keep divided. In other words, the self-conscious aspect and the subconscious are divided. And so, at the end of the tarot, they are one. And there is no difference between the self-conscious and the subconscious. In other words, they function as one being. So this is an early stage, we'll say, in your awareness, when you are able to see this. Yes?
Well, this case shows the ideal relationship among the three aspects of consciousness.
That's right.
Yeah, so it draws us toward that by studying it.
Yeah, sure. Yeah?
You said in the beginning that the self-conscious is a powerful integrating force. I just wanted to elaborate on that.
Well, because, like the magician, it stands for concentration. I mean, that's the magician's, his main trick is concentration. And that means focusing his energy in one area. And that's part of the business of learning about yourself.
So everything naturally integrates around a being that's focused?
Well, everything is integrated anyway, around unity. But the person is like a universe, and normally they're not focused. So when they're focused, it's just as though, like the rest of the universe, that's focused. In other words, whatever's going on in the universe is a controlled universe as far as it's concerned. This is, of course, a philosophical point, but nevertheless, it's the teaching of the Kabbalah states that the grasping hand of God covers the whole universe. That's Kaf is the first letter at the top of the Tree of Life in Keter. And it simply means that's it, you know. And in other words, it's not a sloppy universe at all, even though at times we don't understand it. Everything is very much under control. It's very hard to believe it, but that's the story anyway. In ourselves, the object of the game is not just to control ourselves. That's not it. You know, you control yourself and you can ride a horse. If you don't, you're going to fall off. You know, that's not that isn't the idea. As David pointed out, the idea is to know yourself and understand yourself, and gradually, through the illumination that comes when you know yourself, you achieve the ability to actually be one with yourself, with your innermost self. And when you do, then you can act in a totally different way from what you would normally act.
Yeah, but 12 months do it. Like 12 months do it. I understand so much of it is on 12.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not sure what 12 months is.
Yeah. But the end of the line, as you know, key 21 is a dancer. That's not sitting down and picking your teeth or something like that. That means just what it says, that you're a part of the dance of life, and that means that you must participate in life.
So if the universe is a controlled place, then you don't have to worry about it. And
you know the story about God coming to George, who was always worrying about things. He said, listen, George, you know, go to sleep and let me take care of things until you wake up in the morning, but have a good night's sleep.
It's easier to see that in the great cosmos, but it's like we're sort of trying to think that we have to run our scene, you know, our world.
Well, we do in a sense, but in order to run it properly, our center has to be quite different from what it usually is. We can't be what we would call normally a self-centered person is frowned upon. But the truth of the matter is, being self-centered in a good way means that you have found yourself in the cosmos. We have to do in the physical world. But we must have the reason as far as our life is concerned, because we really do not know from one day to the next what is going to happen in the physical universe. So you could, you can put that down in the book that we don't know from one day to the next what's going to happen. But we also know that there are many, many agencies in life that are working to protect us. Don't you think so? Yeah. Yes?
Yeah. I find that the times that I have stress and feel stress in my life is when I forget that I'm not really doing anything for myself. And then I start thinking I'm doing something, and then I have to hold it together, and then I get worried about it.
Yeah, well, this is what I'm talking about.
And suddenly
exactly.
I remember that I'm not doing anything, and that makes it a lot easier.
Yeah. In a sense, you're not doing anything.
Right.
Yeah. But that means when you say that, when you do it that way, what you're saying is that what you are doing is so much in harmony with yourself that it doesn't interfere with the, you might say, the state of grace, which is your normal condition, if you're with it.
It's like that quote in the Bhagavad Gita where you need to find the action that is in inaction and the inaction.
Well, that doesn't make any sense, Peter. I mean, you wrote the book, you know, and it does. I mean, you read the book, but I read the book. I studied it for years, and it when you say action and inaction and inaction and action, that's like, just doesn't make any sense at all.
The action and inaction, okay, you don't need
that. No.
Well,
I mean, what you mean? What he's talking about is it's a question of motive that's involved in this. And when you're acting acting and inacting at the same time, it simply means you have no motive. In fact, he tells Arjuna, forget it, go out and kill all these guys. You know, just don't pay any attention to it. Go out and kill them, you know. And if you don't kill them, that's okay too. But just get out and do it, yes?
Well, the way I think of it is that someone who's meditating, for instance, is inactive in appearance. Great activity there.
Well, that's you're getting legal now.
And then someone who has to run around and get things done and yet has peace within is the inaction.
Yeah, well, that's okay. If you run around and get things done, as long as you know what you're doing.
Yeah.
It's like everything else. As long as you know what you're doing, well, you're okay.
Yeah, the alchemists say, just remember, everything's one and it's going to be all right.
Yeah, that's a little hard to do. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I was thinking that all those things are paradoxes if you try to understand them with the part of your mind that's always running around. And it sort of goes back to what David was saying, too, about self-observation. And that if you identify with the observer, with like who's asking the question, then you do get to that deeper place, which is really the mountain. I mean, it's not higher, it's not just the highest, it's also the lowest, because it's just like sinking down into that place where you can see that, yeah, there's this and this, and that's the same place I think, and you can see that you're not really doing anything. But you have to, you sort of have to, but you don't know.
Well, let's say, supposing that we wanted to realize God, okay, we're not going to do that tonight, but let's say that we wanted to realize God, okay? Now, I haven't put out any money yet.
Good job.
No, the first thing you would do, if you wanted to realize God, would be look around and see what the hell is going on. That's how you realize God. I just keep doing that, and as your perception became more and more acute, you would see more into the inside of things and not just the surface. And ultimately, you would begin to appreciate the structure that is underlying all existence. And, you know, this appreciation would give you some idea of what God Almighty really means, you know, which is one of the names of God in the Kabbalah. But this is one way that you can realize God, is to just pay very close attention to what's going on, and don't be afraid to look inside the surface, and you see a great many things.
Like Washington Carver between the lines.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's open to anybody. I mean, it's a, you know, it's no fancy deal, no initiations or anything. Just do it. We all have the privilege, but if we don't exercise the privilege, you know, it's like voting. A lot of people don't vote, but they're making a very serious mistake.
So you say that Dr. Bernstein doesn't have the only line to talk
about my
office. Pardon me? What you're suggesting is that Dr. Bernstein and
your
rin doesn't have the only
mind
to talk about
Ariel. Yeah, no. Bestimmt. No, it's true. It's true. Now, about this business of healing, I just want to remind you that, let's say that, just for example, that Raphael was representing the intelligence of healing in your own body. You know, okay? Now, you know, this is one of my favorite bones to gnaw on, which stems from my delight in Key 18 in the Tarot. Anytime that you have any doubts about the power of healing in your own body, what you ought to do is remember what your body can do in an emergency, and that is really quite remarkable. You know, let's face it, you cut your finger and if it doesn't get infected, it gets well, and if you take good care of it, it's very likely to get well. This is very, very fantastic, you know, this ability for the body to take care of itself. And so the way I look at it personally is that what we term the subconscious as a, well, an intellectual description of something or other, is a very lively sort of creature inside of ourselves, which is doing its damnedest 24 hours a day to keep everything in shape inside of us. And with a little bit of luck, you know, if we eat fairly sensibly and don't drink too much and exercise and so on and so forth, this being inside of us will keep us going a long time. And through the transformations that everybody is heir to. Let's put it this way. How many of you seriously think about how you ever got from being a baby to where you are now? Yeah. I mean, you know, you talk about life and death. Well, the baby you were is as dead as a doornail, believe me. And you don't give a damn about the baby you were unless you're psychotic or something like that. You know, it's over and done with. You just moved on, and then we'll say a 10-year-old or a 15-year-old or a 20-year-old. They're all gone, and you don't weep about what you were, 10, 12, 15, 20, or anything like that, unless you're sick, unless you're psychotic. You just say, to hell with it. You don't even say that. You simply ignore it. But in the meantime, you're very much alive. And you're, as far as your personal identity is concerned, it's the same you as the baby. And you can remember the baby. And you don't mind letting the baby go. and letting the 10-year-old go, and letting the 15-year-old, you don't mind, do you? Now, through all these metamorphoses that, let's say, the lady inside, if you like, has managed to keep you alive and continuing, it's really something, isn't it? So, when I think about healing, getting back to Raphael, I think about this spirit inside of us, which is certainly faithful and quite miraculous. And this is a good thing to think about, because you you have a choice. You can either listen to TV, and as I say, have Advil or Nonvil or whatever, Anvil or whatever the hell it is, to keep you going. Or if you like, you know, Angela Lansbury, and I don't know who could possibly dislike that gal, she's cute as a bug. Anyway, she gets by on not aspirin. What is the one she has? Tylenol, isn't it? Tylenol, which is very expensive, by the way, and and so on and so forth. So we can, you know, fool around with that stuff, or we can think about what's been going on for all the years that has been looking after us. And we've gotten over, if you add it all up, we've gotten over a lot of things, you know, all of us. Not only all the children's diseases, but lots of other things, and falls and this and that and the other, and so on. Just a whole bunch of stuff.
Yeah, you suggested something that you just said, you said the spirit of Raphael within you is faithful. Why is it that sometimes it's so difficult to consciously have that faith?
Well, you have to cultivate it. You have to cultivate it. You have to remember. If you remember, as far as success is concerned, you must not stop remembering at all. I mean, you have to be able to keep the important things in your head all the time, and that's one of the advantages of the tarot, which is a pretty goofy way of doing it, but it works. In other words, this imagery is a bona fide good way to remember things. And even in the Tree of Life, as you well know, every one of these centers on the Tree of Life has a special image that you can use if you want to concentrate on the Tree of Life. And it's a, you know, it's a particular image. And for instance, you know, the High Priestess in the Tarot sort of represents the Bina principle on the tree, and then the Empress represents the Doth principle between the Chokmah and Bina. And they specifically call to mind things that are very, very important to you and to me. The Empress is a pregnant mother. She's between father and mother on the tree, and she represents fruitfulness, the ability for life to reproduce itself and so on and so forth, which is the most miraculous thing we know anything about. It really is. And so it goes. Every one of these images has a really important message for us. And when it comes to healing, why, we, there are things we can do which are good for us, you know, besides nostrums and so on and so forth. Yeah.
You know, you said many times that you made that point that the ability to reproduce ourselves is such a miraculous thing. Why is it so goddamn miraculous? Every species, every animal.
I didn't mean us as human beings. I mean that life can reproduce itself it's so anti-science. It's not scientific, that's all there is to it.
Well, it's natural.
Well, but it's not scientific, and there's no explanation for it. In other words, the fact that one should become two is totally ridiculous from a scientific point of view, because it doesn't happen.
We are the moral ecology system who we're for. In other words, like, we're not like the forest, or we don't burn, but we tear ourselves over. We do tear ourselves over, but we don't know what we're really here for.
Yeah, but what I'm talking about is, look, when the initial action takes place, as far as the sperm and the ovum, one thing happens practically when the conception happens. There is one being at that point, okay? And it is the beginning of our physical body, period. And there it is, a very small, barely visible chunk of life, okay? And what happens? Suddenly it's two beings. It's three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, ten, a billion. A billion. That's how many cells there are in us. A billion cells, you know, some wild number of cells that all started from this one cell. This, I'm honored bright. This is the way it is. I kid you not. And this is why it doesn't make any difference whether it's a chicken or us or bull's dog, whatever. It doesn't make any difference. This process is not scientific. It's not science. Science can only describe it, but there's no reason in God's world why it should happen, except maybe God, but nothing else. Yes?
I had a question for something that you were wondering about this cube. You were talking earlier about the Great Mother, and I know that Raphael comes out from the heart of the Great Mother in some ways. And on the tree, this key comes from Dina. I guess what I've been wondering is that why, since this key sort of comes out of Dina, is behind the angel, the sun golden, which is the color, to me, of Tiferet. I'm just wondering if maybe I'm being too literal, and it's just something I don't understand. So like in the light of God.
I don't want to complicate the picture, but one of the games that you can play is to take this key, this one, put the angel up on the top of the tree of life, okay, and the male will be on that side and the female will be on this side. That'll be Chokhmah the father, this will be Bina the mother, and this will be like the sun. The Raphael will be like the power of the sun, the power of gathering. And this will tell you something about what's going on. And this side of the tree is where she is, and the other side is there. And on that side of the tree, the father, up in that center, Chokhmah, the letter is Yod, the flame, okay? So these are all flames, but the father flame is up there, because it's Yod, Hey, Vav, Hey, so Hey, down here. So that's the seat of fire. And then the vegetative seat, which is the water one, is over here. The physical expression of life is entirely the work of the mother. I mean, that's the whole point. Incidentally, speaking of the Bhagavad Gita, I was in Theosophy for a long time. They had a very nicely done book of the Bhagavad Gita, and in the front was a picture of Krishna. And the saying underneath was, which is out of the Bhagavad Gita, I created the whole universe out of part of myself and yet remain separate. Now, okay, isn't that what Mother does? In this case, it was Krishna who was talking, you know. But this is what the mother does. And this is precisely what happens here. Yes, did you?
Well, I was just thinking also that this six can go in the center of the tree of life, and that is the son, S-O-N, of the mother. So it's just natural that the son comes out of the mother, plop, and there he is, you know, the son, S-U-N.
Yeah, that's all right, plop. That's plopology right there.
That's why my grandson came out. He just fell out.
Well, that was nice. That was an easy one. Yeah, you can, of course, you can put it, you can put it down here, and then, but if you put it here, it doesn't read, because this is Venus, whereas if you put it up there, it reads. It reads better up on the top. But don't, you know, as I've said for years and years and years, move the cards around, play with them all you want, because you won't go to hell if you switch them around, and so on and so forth. And we're asked to do that by Paul Case, who was a master of this whole business, and he said, you know, there are umpteen billion ways to arrange the cards and so on. Go ahead, have a good time, and interpret them any way you wish. Because there's a little of each card in all the others. And in this particular diagram that you have here, in the Kabbalah, it is said, with reason, that each one of the centers on this tree contains all the others, one way or another. In other words, either it fathers the succeeding keys, or it contains the previous keys and fathers the other ones, but in any case, it's all in there in every one of them. See? So that makes, that's why they say 100 is very, very important when you think about the tree of life, because it's 10 times the 10 centers on the tree of life. In other words, it's there's this total unity in the diversity that the tree represents. Yes?
I have a quick question. The angel's hair.
Is it real? Is that what you want to ask? Is it a wig?
Where did he get it done?
Yeah. Very interesting hair. You have the hair representing the three qualities, actually, as far as the sattvic, the rajasic, and then the what's the other one?
Tamasic.
And those would be the yellow and the red and the green. The emperor's green and the red would correspond, let's say, to the emperor. And the tamasic, the sattvic would be the yellow.
Like the tarot in India?
The Torah?
The Tara.
Tara, what's
green
that?
Green Tara.
Oh, well, there are lots of, you know. It's if it fits, it's okay. But because for instance, in the Indian system of yoga, they use precisely the same system with the Hebrew letters. For instance, the Hebrew letters they represent intelligences and also the senses. You know, now here the Hebrew letter, which is Zion down here. It represents the sword, basically, a sword, you know. And then it represents, because of the importance of the sword, it represents the creative act. The creative act. In other words, if you carve out a statue out of stone, the chisel is the sword. If you, whatever you do, it's a delineation between what you don't want and what you do want. And you use a sword to say, get out, get, go.
And keep.
In other words, you draw with a magic circle, you draw it with a sword, and everything on the outside is enjoined from coming in, and you're on the inside.
So it's bad, bad. boundaries.
So anyway, it's all through life, it represents the idea of division. And then it also represents keenness. And so this is what connects it with the idea of discrimination. And keen discrimination is something that we have to cultivate. And we can't cultivate keen, we can't cultivate discrimination at all if we're just a believer in a creed. That doesn't give us discrimination. We're not using discrimination. If we were to say, look at all the creeds and discriminate upon all of them, that we could use our discrimination that way. But if we hang on to a creed, we have already abjured the discrimination. In other words, if you're a believer, you either are or you're not. You're either in the church or you're not in the church. That's all there is to it. There's no, you can't straddle the issue. So that's the way it is. And that's the sword is in the Kabbalistic scheme. The sword represents Yetzirah, the world of formation, and they mean that in the most serious sense because it's the world that is just above the physical world, and everything in the physical world is cut out, including us.
I don't know the time of
Well, a sword is a sword, you know. It's we have a lady here whose name is Rosemary Rose, somewhere in here.
That's
you. Yeah, okay. So Rosemary Rose, you're the one that we use a lot here because we're always talking about Gertrude Stein's idea of rose is a rose. And it's very, very important because in the everyday world, it's one thing, and in the spiritual world, it's something totally different.
It's very light, isn't it?
Yeah. So the thing to remember is the sword, which exists all over the world, is just a sword. But this, you understand that this is imagery, this is symbolism. So when you meditate on the idea of a sword, you immediately see that it's related to everything that cuts out, like a lathe or an axe or anything. Not just a sword, but anything that divides and makes two out of one. And that's...
Why not water? I mean, why not the sea?
Well, I mean, it doesn't matter whether it's India or... This is the way it is. You know, so...
Here now.
Yeah. It's... Well, this is certainly a change of pace, and we were talking about some of our capabilities and some of our attributes, and this key, you might say, represents our success if we are in command of our attributes. The most dramatic part of the key is the sphinxes. I mean, this is the heavy part of the message in this key. And the sphinxes represent your desire nature. And your desire nature is the same whether you're going toward something or you're going away from it. If you go toward something because you like it, or you go away from it because it repels you, it's the same principle in yourself that's operating. And it is said that the charioteer controls these two workings of the desire nature by the invisible reins of the mind. which simply tells you that perhaps the only way to control your emotions and your desire nature, not your emotions, but your desire nature, is through intelligence. That's the only way that you can do it. And in order to do it intelligently, you have to understand the mechanism. And you have to understand that there's nothing wrong with desire, nothing at all. This is the basis of life. The whole biosphere of life runs on this principle. You know, if you poke a paramecium, he's going to swim like hell to get away, you know, even though this is a basic building block in biology. This is a basic thing. He's going to get out, you know what I mean? So this is the basic driving force. And, you know, it's the same thing when your time comes in the machinery of nature and you see either a beautiful man or a beautiful woman, you're going to move whether you like it or not. I mean, that's the law and that's the way it works. The desire part is just, it's built in all over the place. This is a major feature of life. But to introduce some intelligence into the matter sometimes is helpful. There's not much you can do in a catastrophe, which is like falling in love. You simply have to wait till it stops. You know, there's nothing you can do about it. The psychiatrists call it a happening, which you can do nothing about. I mean, it just happens, you know. It's a serious business. One minute you're a fairly reasonable human being, and the next minute you're mad. You're mad, that's all. You're mad about someone. And, you know, when you're young, you have puppy love, which is just as real as anything else, and even more exacting. And then a little later, you have the sequel, which is a pretty heavy love affair, and you go on and on and on, and so on and so forth. But when it happens, there's nothing you can do about it. And when you look at this key, you can see how the mechanism works in yourself. You know, when you are attracted to an object or a person or whatever it is, or the opposite, this is the mechanism in the key. Now, but aside from that, this key represents, you might say, the powers of the mind, which are great. You know, we got all kinds of powers tucked in our minds. And that aspect, the powers of the mind, deals with our relationship with the cosmos on an intellectual level. In other words, as children of the cosmos, we can communicate with it, and that's where we get our ideas. That doesn't come from a book or anything like that. If we write a book, that's where the ideas come from, the cosmos through us and so on. But this is how it works. So the connection is symbolized in the key by the stars over the head of the charioteer. In other words, the heavens have an influence, which we've talked about many times here, which is a crude example would be cosmic rays, which, as I've mentioned many times, because it fascinates me, and I guess it fascinates you, what happens is when a cosmic ray hits the atoms in your beautiful head, it splits the atoms and sends all sorts of rays going through your head, you know, whether you like it or not. So, and we don't know, these could be ideas, and we don't know what they are. They don't kill us. They're not good for us if we get an overdose of them, but just enough. Which is all the time, 24 hours a day, we're continually bombarded with these rays, and they split atoms, not all the atoms in our head, but they split some. And when they do, then these rays come out, you know, beta, gamma, this, that, and the other. They all come out from this and all over our heads and so on and so forth. And that's the immediate connection that we have, you might say, with the outside universe. Don't take my word for it. Look it up. Look it up in the book. This is the key of victory in the tarot, and you'll notice that the victorious self, which is you, has moved out of the city more or less permanently, and put a river between itself and the town on the other side. So that's interesting too, that he's on the other side of the river. And the big connection there is that the city is the generally accepted world about us, in the everyday world. It's not the spiritual world at all. And the charioteer is in the spiritual world. And the river is like the River Jordan or the River Styx or anything else. He's on the other side. So everything of a spiritual nature is involved in the symbolism of this key. And Wall Street's on the other side of the river. That's up and down, but that's the other side of the river. The opposites, he's in like the high priestess. Well, he's a moon key anyway. That's Bob?
Ruled by the moon.
Yeah, okay. And the phases of the moon, so on and so forth, and the whole idea of opposites ties them up with the high priestess, she represents the union of opposites. In other words, that means that the opposites are neutralized. So that's also part of the control that he exerts. He understands that going this way too far or going this way too far is losing the center where the path is and so on and so forth. Paul speaks very, very enthusiastically. Paul Case speaks very enthusiastically about this key, and I hope that you'll have an opportunity to read his remarks about it in the coming week. And in the meantime, if you want to avoid any trouble at Halloween, by all means, read all of Crowley's work. So thanks a lot for coming. God bless.
Oh, my God.